Hello, my name is Debbie Boone, and I want to welcome you to my podcast, The Bend, where we explore how successful people, some well-known and others not as much, navigated the path and emerged in a better place when life threw them a curve. It's inspired by one of my favorite sayings, the bend in the road is not the end of the road unless you fail to make the curve. These conversations will hopefully help you and inspire you to embrace your personal bend and flourish. I hope you enjoy The Bend and add it to your subscriptions. And if you need help with your own personal navigation and are in veterinary medicine, please feel free to reach out to me at Debbie Boone, 2 Manage Vets Consulting. Now enjoy The Bend and be inspired by our amazing guest. Welcome.
All right. Good morning, everyone. And it is morning in the Pacific Coast, which is where our guest is from today. So we have to figure out our time zones. But I want to welcome an acquaintance of mine from kind of way back, and that is Craig Conklin. And Craig is at present the Executive Vice President of Business Development for the Lakefield Veterinary Group. But when I met him, he was working as the Senior Director of Business Development at Patterson Veterinary, which is, of course, the Animal Health Division of Patterson Companies. Now, while he was at Patterson, he led the National Sales Accounts, Veterinary Hospital Management Education, which was where I was teaching the Patterson University classes. He also led the Veterinary Hospital Loyalty Program and sales training teams. He served as the business process owner of Patterson's Enterprise Resource Planning Software Implementation Team for the animal health business. And he also, prior to that, led the Pacific Northwest branch, which was at the top branch in the country. He's members of multiple veterinary management groups and the California Veterinary Medical Association. And prior to that, he worked for IDEX and then before that, CentOS. He was born and raised in the Pacific Northwest and has a bachelor's of science in business administration and marketing and a minor in computer science. So that's a very handy combination today. But one of the cool things about Craig is his wife is an author, Emiko Jean, which some of you may have read some of her books. He has 2 kids and he's a Seahawks fan. I hope he gets to watch a little football this year. It's going to be different, certainly. And apparently he's a fisherman because steelhead seems to be something that he's on the lookout for. So my husband and I live in North Myrtle Beach. We have a boat. We want to learn how to fish and we have no clue what we are doing. It is truly the blind leading the blind. So anytime you want to visit the other coast, Craig, bring a fishing rod. We don't have steelhead, but we can work on something else that's edible here. Flounder, Spanish mackerel, whatever. But you're going to be teaching some people how to fish because we don't know how.
We'll hire a guide. How about that?
That's it. Yeah. All right. So today we're going to talk a little bit about your career path, because as I said, I mean, you started out with CentOS, which I used to use as a veterinary practice manager to do cleaning supplies, and they had some tools that were the best thing I ever bought, honestly, in a veterinary hospital. And then you moved over to do work with IDEX, and then Patterson. So there's kind of a logical progression. I see a lot of sales reps moving from just kind of coming into the hospital one and then moving to IDEX, which is manufacturing, and then maybe going into distribution, which is the path that you went, or from distribution back to manufacturing. I've always laughed in veterinary medicine that the faces never change, but the business cards do. Mm-hmm. Because it's such a great profession. People get into it and they never want to leave, right?
Exactly right.
Yeah. So I'm imagining that with your marketing degree and your computer science minor, that working as an animal health person was probably not the first thing on your career agenda. So how did you start? I mean, how did you kind of get into this path?
Yeah. So, and thank you for asking me to join. I'm happy to share with you my background, and it's always a pleasure to see you. So we met way back when. I still remember the first time I had you come out to one of our branch events, and I think it was in Reno. We had an event when I was the branch manager for what was then Webster Veterinary Supply before they changed the name to Patterson. I had a great opportunity to see you speak, and I was just so impressed. And we had an opportunity to share that with as many veterinarians as we could get in a room, really. Yeah. And so we did that as many times as we could. So thank you, first of all, for helping me along the way with your professional advice and our clients.
I'm happy to do it. All ships rise, and we want to make the veterinary profession the best it can possibly be. And and that's why we are doing this today, is so we can help people in our profession navigate some of the rough spots. Yeah.
So I got into it. You're correct. When I was in school, I wanted to get into business. I always knew that I wanted to be in business. I saw that as my career path from a very young age. My grandfather was a businessman, and I just kind of knew that was the direction I wanted to go. The rest of my family were all teachers. And so I saw a different path for myself. But when I was in school, I had a great education and a great marketing teacher. And they actually had a really good job fair at the school I was at, where I graduated, Southern Oregon University in Ashland, which unfortunately is on fire right now with all the wildfires. But I actually went to the job fair my junior year, and then again my senior year, and I met multiple companies, and this was in 98, 99. So it was very much a job seeker's market. And I was able to actually get two job offers coming out of school between Enterprise and Cintas, both in sales. And so I saw sales as the quickest way to move into where my true passion was, which was leadership and management. And I thought, well, no better way to prove myself, because I didn't know anybody in any industry and no connections to go out and earn a reputation. So I took an outside sales position with Cintas, and it was 100% commission sales gig. I did that for 3 years. And then I was lucky enough to be promoted to be the sales manager of that same team. And I did that for another 3 years. And I didn't know anything about veterinary medicine. I was working in a totally unrelated field. We didn't have any veterinary customers as clients, but I had a disagreement with my then supervisor, and I got a phone call from a recruiter. And the recruiter said, "Have you ever thought about medical device sales?" And normally I don't even return those phone calls, but that day I happened to return the call, and the person I spoke to was very persistent. So
really good recruiter.
He was a good recruiter. He was a very good recruiter. And so I went on a couple interviews with the human medical device instrument sales, and that's a totally different world that I had no experience in. Seemed interesting, but they were looking for people with experience, so I didn't pursue any of those. But then he asked me if I thought about medical devices for veterinary hospitals, and I said, "Tell me more. I don't know anything about that." And so long story short, I ended up going on a bunch of interviews and met the teams over at IDEX and started my career in veterinary medicine with them. So it was interesting. Before I went on my first interview, I went into a couple of veterinary hospitals where I was living, and I just asked, "Hey, I'm thinking about going to work for this company called IDEX. Have you guys ever heard of them?" And three hospitals said, "Yeah, we do business with them." And so it was a favorable response I got from people I had no idea about. So I really enjoyed my time with IDEX. And while I was working for them, they sold their stuff through distributors. And the top distributor that I worked with was the Webster Vet Supply team. And so when I was actually up for an internal promotion at IDEX, and I approached the then branch manager at Webster for a recommendation, and he said, "Sure, but I'll do you one better. I just got promoted myself. Why don't you come work for me?" So I wasn't looking to change companies at all. In fact, I was asking for a job recommendation for staying at the one I was at. But he made a compelling argument, and I already knew all the people. And so I decided to make that shift from manufacturing to distribution. That was in 2007.
So that was really kind of your first curve in the road, because here you were just kind of tooling along. And I do want to go back to something that you said, because you said right out of college, or right in my first job, I took 100% sales commission job. And I think that's kind of brave, because I see a lot of veterinarians who are very concerned about using a you know, production base, and there's arguments both ways on pro-sal and production. But in my experience, the veterinarians who take that risk and work on production actually make more money in salary than people who don't, because they're rewarded for doing hard work, and it is hard work. So when you were sitting here thinking, oh my God, you know, I could make no money, or I could starve, how did you say, I'm just going to do it? I have confidence in myself, and I'm just going to do that.
Yeah, well, two things. One, the person I was going to work for was experienced and showed me that they were going to teach me how to earn a living doing that. So also there was a draw of $27,000 a year. So, you know, divided by 12 months, you know, that's how much the draw was per month. And so I knew that that's how much I had to sell in order to get anything beyond that. And I thought $27,000 a year is the minimum. Okay, that's better than nothing. And so I really saw it as a great opportunity, because I was confident that I would be able to do the job they described me to do. I had when I was in high school, I joined this club called DECA, the Distributive Education Clubs of America. And when I was doing the competitions, I actually placed third at the state meeting, and got to go to the national competition. And so I got to do, even before college, some presentation style events. And I realized I had a knack for communicate. And so I was confident that if I was given the opportunity, I'd be able to do well. I was totally naive in understanding the cost of living involved with doing that. So I quickly found that, you know, it's not only about working hard, it's also about working smart and doing things the right way. So it was a leap of faith, but I did it because I had confidence, knowing that the team I was joining was good. The person who I was going to be my boss was somebody I trusted, and they did me right. They showed me how to do it. And soon after that, I was making two and three times that annually as a 22-year-old kid, you know, making, it was great. You know, I was single and I didn't have a lot of obligations besides, you know, work at the time. So, and that's one of the reasons why I think my career progressed the way that it did, because I quickly found myself an opportunity to become the leader of that same sales team when my boss got promoted. And then I did that for another 3 years. So then I got to teach others what I was taught, and I found more satisfaction in that than I did actually the selling side. So that's kind of how I knew internally that leadership was really more what I was wired for.
Maybe that education gene pool was coming out in you, because the teaching part of it. And that's the part that I love too. Of course, you see me in action, and I absolutely love teaching veterinary teams how to do better communication and serve their clients well and have, you know, just a really good life balance, because the key to everything is communication and being able to, I guess, you know, promote yourself. Like, you obviously, just your communication skills are what lifted you up in your job positions, because I can guarantee you that if you had not made an impression on those sales managers over at Webster, that they would not have said, hey, I just write you a letter of recommendation, but no, let me give you a job instead. Tell me a little bit about, you know, when you left IDEX and you went to Patterson, because you progressed very quickly in that company, and it's a huge company.
Thank you. I joined as the branch manager for the Pacific Northwest, and I did that for a number of years. Because I came into the role already having some leadership experience, having managed a sales team before, even before joining the veterinary industry, I kind of brought a clear vision of what I was looking to do. And I took the approach of, you know, in a leadership role, you have kind of two choices. You've got the opportunity to go down the path of managing others, or you've got which is more the carrot of the philosophy, or you can go the leadership path, which is more showing others. And so I quickly determined that the servant leadership model was really more my style. And I really wanted to focus on how can I help clear things out of the way for the sales team, because the sales team that I joined to lead, they're very experienced. Many of them had been doing it for multiple decades in the same territories. And I knew that coming in. So I was responsible for the branch where their call center was and the sales teams who were outside sales reps, covering the region of basically Alaska, Oregon, Washington, Idaho, Montana, and then the Northern California. And I knew that if I helped those salespeople get their obstacles cleared out of their way, they would be able to spend more time seeing their clients. And because many of them were also 100% commissioned, I understand that mentality coming from my background. So I knew that, you know, in that mindset, the more time they could spend in front of their clients, the more they were personally going to be able to make. And so I was trying to do everything I could to help that front. And so it took a few years before it started clicking and I got the right team in place. So it didn't happen overnight, but then we really started humming along right around year four, year five. And then I started having other opportunities to help out beyond my branch put in front of me. So the first one was with a sales training initiative where the company came to me and said, we're going to do this formalized sales training program. We'd love to help you, have you be a part of the training of it. So, you know, no additional compensation, no additional perk, just do you want to help out? And so I volunteered and got to go and get some additional training, became a certified trainer in that platform myself. And then along with three other people led the training effort and then conducted the training for all the new hires. Even though I was managing the branch in the Northwest, I would go around the country conducting a week-long training seminar. And so I got to meet a lot of new people. And I got to go to parts of the country that I would not have already been going to. And in doing that, I got to build more relationships with more individuals. And before I knew it, a couple of years had gone by and I had been personally involved with training over half of the country. And so, well, it was just a neat opportunity. And yeah, myself and others got to participate in that. And so I learned that, yeah, if you, and then the person who was in charge at the time, he rewarded me with a bonus that I was not anticipating and it was not part of what my compensation structure was with at the time. So I definitely had people who appreciated the work I was doing and rewarded me for that. So although it's not the reason I did it, I had then surprises come along the way that validated what I knew to be the right thing to do. And I thought, okay, well, I'm going to do more of that. And so as other opportunities came up, and by the way, none of which directly had anything to do with the job I was currently, you know, doing, I volunteered to do those other opportunities as well. So when we met with the education program that Patterson had, I really believe strongly that was a great platform. And so about 4 years later, I was then in charge of it and you know, and expanding it and growing it. And I had an opportunity to help build a new division of the education wing, which was helping veterinarians go out on their own for the first time and build a practice from the ground up. So we developed a seminar and I got to help with the creation of that seminar that is still going to this day. Another one was
the executive
one. And then that was one that was actually the brainchild of my predecessor, a gentleman named Jim Herring. And he created that platform and then I helped just kind of implement it. A different one was called what is now called the GPS program, the Guiding Practice Success, which is a program that they still run where veterinarians come together and they get an education on design of a practice, financing of a practice, practice management, along with all the equipment that you would need. And I kind of have always been very passionate about equipment sales because that's where I started in the veterinary industry. And I knew that in the Pacific Northwest, people are very progressive in how they practice medicine. And so I thought if I could have a national platform to highlight some equipment and bring veterinarians to that, we would probably sell more in the Pacific Northwest. And we did. And so it very much helped. But then I got to meet more people and more people. And so I was then, a colleague of mine, Bo Eiler, approached me and asked me to join his team he was forming for national accounts. And so in 2014 or 15, I was promoted to the national accounts team. And then I was leading that team. And that's where I met the Lakefield group. So yeah, they were all...
It all just kind of snowballs in there. One of the things that I, you know, firmly believe in, and this is what we're doing today, is creating a network of people who you might not know everything. And this is what I tell my clients as a consultant. I don't know everything. I certainly don't, even though I've been doing it a very long time, but I know super smart people. And I can connect you with those people. And you know, just my experience with Patterson and some of the things that you're talking about, if I have clinics who are trying to think about developing or building their animal hospital, well, I've built four practices from the ground up and I know what's involved in it. And I have my list, but there's nothing like being able to take somebody over to a branch and go, let's walk through this pretend hospital, because here's all the stuff, right? And the support that you guys give. So I don't want it to be a Patterson commercial, but I just, that mindset of how you can be progressive, and when you help people fill their needs, then you actually progress in your life too. And that's just something that I believe in. I want to step back a little bit, because when you talked about taking over the branch and having sales reps that had been there decades, and here you were the new guy, and I'm sure younger than a lot of them, managers often go into practices that have these legacy employees. And it's sometimes it works out great. You know, sometimes depending on their leadership skills, they're able to kind of envelop these people into their vision for what's going on. And other times, it doesn't work out so well. So just give me some tips that we can share with the audience about dealing with those people who, well, they're kind of entrenched in their ways. We've always done it this way. It works fine for me. How can we move them forward, or either move them out?
Yeah, it's a really good question. So to me, it all comes back to trust. So in leadership, I found in my career that when I trusted the people who were in leadership, I was willing to do pretty much whatever they asked. And I knew that stepping into a new role, I had some trust with some of the people, but I didn't have all the trust with everybody. And so how would I build that? And so I tried to do it a couple of ways. First, a lot of people are, this is the way we've always done it. That's therefore the way we should always do it. And there is a little bit of truth to that. If you think about it and you take a step back and kind of detach from the situation you're currently in, there is a broader connection to the organization you're working for. And the fact is, it is still operating as a business. So therefore, things are not inherently bad when you step into that role. There are successes going on. And so how can you as a leader identify and highlight the things that are working well and do more of that, and then identify and highlight the things that aren't working and lift people up to be able to change those aspects of it. So for me, it was always about trying to listen to what the team's needs were and really understand from their perspective why they're doing it the way they're doing it now. And where I asked people to change is when I got the answer of why this is just, I guess, the way I always thought it should be. And there really wasn't a good reason. Then we would look at it and say, okay, let's think about it. Should this be the way we do it continuing forward? But I didn't come in saying now everybody's going to change everything. Yeah. And I've seen leaders do that in the past. And it really discredits, I think, the team that was there prior if it was actually successful. Now, there's definitely situations I've stepped into and I've seen in the past where the business was not successful and it did need that overarching change. In those situations, it's not going to be news and it's not going to be new to anybody. But in broad terms, I found that when you come into a new role, and yeah, I was the youngest manager in the entire company at the time when I had joined. So not just within my group, I was literally the youngest guy with the whole firm.
Wow, so, that pressure there, Craig.
Well, yeah, and so I knew, okay, well, I don't know everything. So I tried to listen as much as I could. And, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People was a book that I read thoroughly back to back, front to cover in my first management job. So I had this idea of, all right, if I can first try and understand what's going on with this team and hear from their perspective what their challenges are, then I should be able to make some change. There's a really good show on Apple TV right now. It's called Ted Lasso. I don't know if you've seen it.
I haven't seen it.
It's about a football coach, Jason Sudeikis, from the United States, American football, who then goes to the UK to be hired as a head football coach of the Premier Football League in London. And it's a really cute little show, but it has lots of leadership kind of truisms about it. One of the things he first does when he shows up in this new locker room, he's never seen or met these guys before, is he brings out a suggestion box and he puts it on the counter and they're laughing at him. He's an American football coach. He doesn't even know the sport. And he just says, hey, I just want to know what you guys think needs improvement. And there was a lot of bad comments, and it's a comedy, so there's a lot of funny stuff. But one of them said, the water pressure in the showers is terrible. And so out of all these comments, he actually found one that he could actually fix, knowing nothing about the game or sport. But then he developed that trust with that person who then had the comment. And so to me, it's all about finding the different areas that you can have positive change and build that bond of trust, because there's going to be hard stuff that comes and you're going to have to spend that emotional capital and that trust capital at some point in order to help the company do what it needs to do. But if you don't have any emotional capital, you don't have any trust, then it'll all fall apart. So for me, that's what I found is helpful.
Well, I think that's such wise advice, because I see new managers go in and they immediately want to just fix everything or do it the way they do it. And you're right, there's a lot of things that are going well. And as a consultant, one of my jobs is to go and find the things that are not going well and to coach people how to get to where they want to be. So there's things that I go in and went, you know what, this is great. You are doing this beautifully. We're not even going to waste our time on that. Let's just do that. But here's the things that cause you pain. So let's work to fix the things that cause you pain. And then you have buy-in from the team. Because if you don't get that buy-in, you are going to have people who are bucking your every move. And then you get the drama and everything is a thing, right? Everything becomes a thing. And we certainly want to avoid that.
Well, and that's where I think, you know, I'm seeing that a lot now with Lakefield. So with Lakefield, which is my chosen home and, you know, where I've been for the last 3 years, and if I have my way, this will be my forever company. We are now really change agents when we go. So when I buy a hospital, one of the things that is super challenging is the team doesn't trust us at all.
you're the corporate raider that came in, right?
Yeah, exactly. And so we're a privately held company, and the people who do the acquisitions, myself, Molly, our president, Chad, our chief development officer, Alexander, our owner, we all meet the owners well ahead of time through an acquisition, and we develop a relationship over time with the sellers. And so usually I'm walking into a situation where the sellers have a tremendous amount of trust in me personally and our company, because we've got to know them over the course of a couple of years in many cases. And we just closed on one in Washington. I first met 10, 15 years ago, back when they used to come to the Patterson University education series. So I've known a lot of these hospitals for a very long time, and the owners have a element of trust in me, but the teams don't. And right. So when we go in and meet them for the first time, we talk to them about what is it that we do to support them as an organization. How do we, we'll share with the teams on day one, the first time they ever meet us, that you will not make less money working for us. Your benefits will not be worse. And if there's ever a nuance at our firm that we find that there's a legacy policy that we can't do moving forward, we make it right by that employee, either with additional wages or some one-off compensation. And of course we say that and the team still don't believe it. Mm-hmm. But then when we actually then show them all of the details and we give them the information that says, here's how it was done, here's how it's gonna be with us, here's the gap, and here's how we're gonna fill that gap for you, then they can see, oh my gosh, this is a company that actually does what they say they're gonna do. And that once we then cross that bridge, the trust is now coming back and we move forward. But it's very, in some cases, it can be very challenging.
I want to go back because I know part of your story that we haven't gotten to yet. Yeah. And that is that the big decision, the true bend in the road, when on the same day you were offered two positions and you had to make that choice. So tell us a little bit about that day and what happened.
Yeah, so this is I was the senior director of business development at Patterson. I'd been in that role for about a year. And the president of the company came to me, said he wanted to offer me the role of vice president of marketing, which I knew was a very good promotion. I knew everybody who had that job prior to me, and I saw it was a great job. I knew it really well. I knew what I could do. And having helped build their loyalty program, I understood the marketing aspects of the organization. So I felt fairly confident in my abilities to do that job. At the same time, I had been talking to the Lakefield group for about a year. So they approached me after they decided to switch their vendor over to Patterson. It took me a long time to convince them to do that. But then after we got that contract put in place, they approached me, and for about a year we had been talking, and I didn't really know what my role would be with Lakefield. I didn't really see that as a interesting change in my career when we first started talking. But then once I got to know the team a bit more, and I got to know Molly, the president, a bit more, I realized this is a group of people that has the exact same core values that I do, which is do the right thing for other people, enjoy what you're doing, respect others. And they were building an organization that needed somebody to come in and help them expand. And in my career, what I've found has worked for me is taking what was already there and making it bigger. Building something from scratch and then growing it, those two things are very different. I've had multiple opportunities to do both, and I really enjoyed it. And so I saw an opportunity to join a firm that was on the growth side, and I had a lot of relationships that I knew would help with that, that I had built over time. You mentioned networking. I knew that networking was really something that I had held a lot of value of. And so, it was July 3rd, 2018. I received a job offer from my present employer to take a promotion to become vice president of marketing. And the same day, I received the job offer from Lakefield to join as the executive vice president of business development, two totally different companies, two totally different jobs. And I had a decision to make. And it was a very interesting one. I will never see that happen in my career again. I can guarantee it. But it was something that I felt very fortunate that both firms felt confident in me to be able to provide value to them. So I was very appreciative of those opportunities. And I think the safe way would have been to stay with the company that I was already at, because I'd been there for over 12 years and I knew everybody in the firm and I knew the inner workings of the company really well. And then I think the riskier one was leaving to join Lakefield, but I really had to, think about in my decision-making process, what's most important to me, because this was a unique opportunity and I had two different opportunities at the same time. So I saw it as I was super grateful that the people who came before me laid the path that I was able to actually be in a situation where I had that opportunity put in front of me. And B, I had to think about long-term, what did I really want to do? And I was, I just turned 40, my two kids had just been born. So I had a lot to think about, and I really focused with my wife on thinking about what's in the best interest of our family. And so we looked at it and said, all right, I've always worked for companies that were based somewhere else. So I've always traveled as part of my career. And I realized with my kids being born and where we were that moving was not something I was interested in. I'd already done that once before for my career. I moved my family and then I ended up being gone a lot anyways. And so I realized I wanted to try and go backwards from a travel standpoint, not more. And so travel is required in both positions, but with Lakefield, we're based in the Pacific Northwest. It would be the first time that I would be joining a company that was based in the state where I actually lived, which for me was a bit of a big, big thing, because I could drive to the office. Patterson and before that, IDEX, and before that, Cintas, they're all based in somewhere in the Midwest or the East Coast. And so I was always on a plane. So I knew that I wanted to travel less. I wanted to spend more time around my kids. But also I wanted to help build an organization that I could, that would stand the test of time, because I wanted to help build an organization by doing it with quality. And I knew that if I was focusing on an area that I could really drive and I could see hospitals and I could meet people and spend time with them and build relationships, that's what's worked best for me in my career. And that was definitely more on the side of the Lakefield opportunity. The VP of marketing job at Patterson was more of a opportunity that would allow me to advance within the Patterson company. But I also knew that it would likely eventually require relocating to either Colorado or Minnesota, which was not really interesting to me. So even though they were giving me the opportunity to stay where I was, I decided that for my family, I wanted to take a job that I thought would be a little bit less travel. And so I felt like it was a little bit of a risk, but I also built a relationship with the Patterson team over a long period of time. So I knew, or excuse me, the Lakefield team over a long period of time. And I knew that if I were to take this role, I would receive the support to learn new skills, and I would receive the opportunity to provide my input in a meaningful way. And so I jumped at the opportunity, and it was the hardest phone call I ever had to make was to Kevin Pullman, the president of Patterson Animal Health, and respectfully decline the opportunity that he presented to me. And he was so gracious. He said, "Craig, look, I will never fault somebody for making a decision that will benefit their family. And if that's truly what you believe, then I wish you nothing but the best of success." And he's just the most gracious person. And I have a hold him with a tremendous amount of respect. So yeah, that was my bend in the road for sure.
Yeah. Well, I love the way that you kind of work through your decision-making process, because I think sometimes people, they feel so afraid of making that leap to the next thing that they don't use logic. Their emotion has taken over, and you were very logical about, you know, these things, and the fact that you knew people and that you actually almost had the ability to do some research ahead of time on the job. Now, a lot of times young veterinarians will come and take a job. In fact, there's a very high statistic that when they take a job, they quit after the first year because they've made a bad decision. And you and I, we like stats, so we know these stats, and they're important to our work. But how can we give them some idea about, you know, being more logical about making these decisions? Because I see them go in and, you know, there'll be a nice facility and there'll be some cool equipment, but then they fail to talk to the team about the culture, and they fail to see the drama that's hanging around, you know, kind of maybe hidden on the day of the interview, but still hanging around there. The longevity of the staff is something that I usually ask people to ask in their interview. How long have you worked here? And if somebody says, oh, you know, if everybody says, oh, less than 6 months, that's a huge red flag to culture. So what would you advise? Like, I mean, you're hiring young veterinarians. Obviously, everybody is. Tell me what you would advise them to look for when they're making these decisions about making a change of job.
Yeah, you're right. We hire veterinarians every day. And I personally am currently overseeing the hospitals in Oregon that I acquired. And so I'm in that unique situation where I actually knew the selling doctor before we acquired it. And then I came in as part of the change agent, you know, talking about the new needs. And as these hospitals have grown, we then have hired new veterinarians at these hospitals. And so I've also then got to interview people coming in on the front end as an owner of the business. And one of the things that I talk to veterinarians about is what are they interested in, and what are the, where do they see their career going? So what I try to focus on is if there's an opportunity for us as an employer to help a veterinarian further their career, then we're gonna do everything we can to do that. And so if they don't really have a clear vision of where they want their career going, they're just looking for a job, there's gonna be a place for them to work. Somebody will hire them to be a veterinarian. What we're looking for are veterinarians that they want to be part of something broader than themselves. And in many cases, that is in the form of giving back to the larger veterinary community. And so we have a relationship and affiliation with a group called World Vets. World Vets is based out of Gig Harbor, Washington, and they provide philanthropic veterinary services in impoverished communities all over the world. So for the last 3 years, this trip got canceled this year, but for the last 3 years, we've partnered with World Vets, and we have sent teams of 20 to 25 team members from our hospitals to Peru, Ecuador, and Nicaragua, and provided veterinary care in those impoverished communities. And it's super hard work. And there's the videos on our website, so anyone watching this can check it out. But what I talk to the veterinarians about is if that's part of what you see as your career, it's a really unique opportunity to our company, because it's an essay application process. So we ask our employees to write down why you would want to do this. And then last year we had 75 applicants for 25 spots. So we have to narrow it a bit. But if you get selected, we pay for 100% of the travel costs. We pay the veterinarian as if they're working in one of our hospitals. It doesn't count towards their paid time off. And they get to go do that, check that box of one of the reasons why they really went to become a veterinarian to begin with. So we've now seen that, and you know, hiring veterinarians is very competitive. And so there's a lot of, you know, things like sign-on bonuses. We've seen now multiple times, we've presented veterinarians with an opportunity to join our firm with a signing bonus, or join our firm with this opportunity to go on this World Vets trip instead of a signing bonus. And we've seen more often than not, the veterinarians have chosen the World Vets trip instead of a sign-on bonus. And so I really try and feel out, like, where are their passions and what are they most interested in and how can we help them with that? So, you know, your comment around the culture of a business is very specific. It's a good question to ask. One of the questions I always get is, well, as a group that owns multiple hospitals, are we some faceless, nameless entity that's kind of lording over our hospitals? And the answer is just call any of our hospitals and ask them, because the proof is in the pudding. And so, by the way, when we make hiring decisions, I am one person in the interview process. I do not make hiring decisions for veterinarians for any of our hospitals. The medical director, who in most cases is a former owner, they're the ones that actually make the hiring decision. And so I'm just helping that medical director try and get good candidates in front of them to pick from. And then the medical director, who was the owner for 20 whatever years, they're the ones who built the culture. And so they're the ones that we allow them the opportunity to share what is really like working here. And we always do working interviews. We don't hire, for the large part, veterinarians without actually having worked in the hospital with the staff, you know, for a full day. So that's just kind of how we go about doing it, but it's been pretty effective for us so far.
I like the fact that you have a screening process. I've given lectures on hiring several times at national conferences, and the statistics are horrendous. That typically hiring managers spend about 5 minutes prepping ahead of time. They'll like, oh crap, it's time for so-and-so to come in. Let me go look at their application. They do a quick read through, and then there's this person in front of them. So they really haven't done much prep work. And then there's no background check. There's no getting the team involved in the hiring process, and no working interview, because my premise is that you can fake anybody out for an hour or two, but put them in a, you know, kind of a pressure cooker for a day and see how they do and, you know, what their natural tendencies are, because behavior rarely changes. And if we know that they behave like this in the past, the chances are high that they're going to behave like this in the future. Is that a behavior that we want, or is it a behavior that we do not want to have in our culture? Well, Craig, I know that I don't want to go over our time, and I know you have a hard stop, but in the making these career decisions and in moving up into the different roles that you've played through multiple different companies, tell me how you think networking played into that, because it's something that I feel that sometimes people think only executives need to network or only management or leadership people need to network, but I believe that everybody benefits from a network of people that they can reach out to for advice or, you know, opportunities or share. So tell me what your thoughts are about, you know, how that worked for you.
Yeah. So I believe that relationship building is one of the things that's been effective for me in my career, building relationships with people, because I kind of think of it in terms of when I got into business, I didn't know anybody, I didn't have any connections. So I had to build a reputation for myself. And what was the foundation of that? I wanted to build a reputation that people knew they could count on me. Because I felt like if people knew they could count on me, then I'd be viewed as dependable. And I feel like I'm pretty responsible in general. So if I could build a reputation by doing what I said I would do, doing it when I said I would do it, and then following up to make sure it got done the way that I said it would get done, then I would have more people feel confident when I met them over time. And so I kind of had that as my core tenet in my idea in mind when I started business. And I realized that the more people I met, that wasn't always the case. And so I was looking when I would meet people and start building relationships with them, did they have a similar view as me? And the people who did, I latched onto and just tried to build those relationships as tight as possible. So for instance, I have a LinkedIn profile, but I do not ever post on LinkedIn. I don't participate in social media because it's not interesting to me. And so I try to only focus my time on the stuff that I'm really, really interested in. And so like I have a Facebook account. I don't have a single friend on it. I actually canceled my old account from years ago because I was tired of getting all these ads. You know, my wife's an author and she's got all this social media stuff, and I follow her, you know. I have a Twitter account, but I'm not active in it because to me that's not helping a relationship. I'm probably missing out on a whole wide variety of relationships because I'm choosing not to participate in that manner. But what I do focus on is the personal relationship building. So that's how I think of networking. So if somebody hits me up on LinkedIn and I've never met them before, I ignore that request. I really view it as people that I know. And then I try and keep my relationships to those that I actually have a shared value system on. And if I meet somebody, I'm impressed with them, and I don't really know them that well, okay, great. I will absolutely have them down as a professional contact and I will reach out to them. And that's a great relationship I can work on. But I'm very protective of my my network and my relationships I've built over time. And I've learned that not everybody has respectful reason as to why they want to get to know you. And so I have seen the difference between givers and takers. And I try to focus more on the giver side than the taker side.
Yeah. It is difficult to find that balance. And you know, my husband is funny because he hates all social media, and he has a social media account because he owned a business before he retired. So he basically is a stalker, but he does not participate in any social media. He just looks at stuff. But for me, I'm terribly active on social media because it allows me to get to kind of stay kind of mentally inside a veterinary hospital and see what the pain points are of the teams, and then try to come up with a solution for, you know, whatever I can do to help them. So I think that people who are just on it to be nosy or to be to tout their own agenda are not, like you said, the people that I want to engage with. And I want to engage with the people who are there to help. And that's what I'm there for. And that's, you know, if I can get a feeling of what's happening out there in the world, then I probably have some kind of solution, or somebody in my network might, just like we're talking today. And because I think you have solutions, and there's always the personal relationships, the one-on-ones are always the most important ones. And I feel like we are losing a little bit of our skill at building one-on-one relationships with people, probably because of social media and obviously because of pandemic that we struggle. But humans are tribal, and we are meant to be together. And when we are not, then it is mentally fatiguing to us to not have a social interaction. So that's where we're all just kind of agitated at the moment, because we're struggling so much with being alone more than we're happy with, and we want to have our human interactions. But that being said, we need to make sure that there's an effort made to keep those relationships going, and to to not be users but to be givers. I love that you said that is absolutely right, because a lot of times networking has a negative connotation. Oh, they just want to, you know, I'll sell this for you if you sell this for me, and that's usually not why I do it, and I'm sure it's not why you do it. I'm genuinely interested in people. I think they're fascinating, and I love to hear, you know, how they think and how they do, and learn from them. And I think we all have something to teach. Even if we are a ditch digger, you can learn something about digging ditches. And even if you are a PhD, you can learn something about that subject matter. So listening more than talking is an important skill set. Any final words of wisdom out there, Craig, for people who are trying to navigate that big bend in the road and make those decisions to, you know, take that step forward, take a chance?
Yeah, I would say the first one is don't trust your gut. don't just go with your gut. I think there's a lot of people who really put some false credence into going with your gut. In fact, Malcolm Gladwell wrote a book about talking to strangers. And in it, he describes many instances where people followed their gut and they didn't think about their decision logically and then the impact that it had. So, you know, to the bend in the road for me, I spent a tremendous amount of time thinking about it. And I told both parties that I was going to spend some time going through it. And I thought through every scenario I could think of. And that's the best advice I would give somebody is if you're considering something, a change in your life, don't rush into it. And don't just do it because you feel like it's the right thing to do. Spend the time, do the research, think about all the different aspects of how that decision might affect not just you, but your entire family and both the relationships you built at the company that you're at and the one that you potentially join. And then I would advise making the decision based, of course, on what's going to be best for you personally. Every employer understands that, but also spending a lot of time thinking through the different scenarios and trying to envision both roles and envision what it would be like either staying or going. And thinking through, what does it look like 2 years from now? What does it look like 5 years from now? What does it look like 10 years from now? And then where you could see the clearest path, 5, 10 years down the road, that's going to be the career opportunity that's probably going to serve you best because you have a mental picture that then you can follow as your vision for that new role or the role that you're currently in. Whereas if you can't see what it's going to be like 12 months, 3 months, 3 years, or 5 years down the road, there's probably a reason for that. There's a blind spot in your understanding of that role that's preventing you from having that mental clarity. So that'd be the first advice. The second advice I would give is read a lot. So I'm a really slow reader, so I do a lot of audiobooks. But I mentioned a few, the ones that I like, Seven Habits is a great one. Givers and Takers by Adam Grant is another great one. The Malcolm Gladwell book, Talking to Strangers, one of my all-time favorite book, the one that I buy for everybody and I bought for everyone on my team, is called Extreme Ownership. And it's written by a gentleman named Jocko Willink. And he also has a podcast you can follow. But if you're interested in leadership or if you're interested in any type of realistic, real-world decision-making skill set development, Extreme Ownership is probably the best book I've ever read on how to take concepts and then actually communicate them to other people. And then he wrote a series of follow-ups. The second one is called The Dichotomy of Leadership. And the third one is called Leadership Strategies and Tactics. And I still believe that Extreme Ownership is the best of the three, but I'm a huge supporter of that. And every time I have a team, I buy them that book, so.
Yeah, I think we all have a few of our favorites and I love all the Malcolm Gladwell books. Mm-hmm. And my favorite one of all time is Crucial Conversations, because at times you've just got to be able to understand how to say something that's not happy to somebody on the other side of that table and to do it well so that they are actually listening and rather than, you know, just being off put by that. And we run into it so many times with clients and team members and even upward leadership, and it's how you can make how can you correct your boss? That's a challenge. And so I love Crucial Conversations for that, but I'm writing down Extreme Ownership. So Craig, tell us anything else you'd like to about, you know, your company. I know you don't do social media, but if we will put up some of your information. If there's a veterinarian who's interested in coming to work for you, we want to make sure they can get in touch with you. Yeah. And I also, if you will email me those three favorite books of yours, we'll make sure that we tag them to the end of the podcast so that our readers or listeners or viewers can have that information available.
Sure. Yeah, Lakefield Veterinary Group, we are a privately held owner of 50 veterinary hospitals spread out across the country. We have 5 regions of the U.S. that we are actively purchasing veterinary hospitals in. That's the Pacific Northwest, where I'm at, which would be Oregon, Washington, Alaska, Idaho, Montana. Then we have what we consider to be the the central part of the U.S., which is Arizona, Texas. We have 13 hospitals in Texas, 14 hospitals in Texas, and I think 11 or 12 in Arizona now. So growing communities there. The upper Midwest, which is Minnesota, Wisconsin, Indiana, that we already have a nice group of hospitals there. So those are the areas that we're looking to expand within. So if any of your viewers are in those areas, you want to reach out, you can call me directly. My number is 253-216-1361. I'll send you my contact info. You can also, yeah, and we also, our website, my profile is on the leadership tab. You can hit the contact us button and submit an email with any information, or just, hey, call me, and I will be the one who then follows up with you. We also, have social media accounts at Lakefield. I have one, I have a Twitter account, but I never check it. I have a LinkedIn account. I do check the LinkedIn one every once in a while because we're hiring for a lot of positions as we continue to grow. And so I check LinkedIn probably more than anything. But the best way for me is just to call me. So call, text, or email.
And well, we'll make sure we get that information out there so that people have that access to you and your amazing group of veterinary hospitals. And I wish you continued growth and absolutely safety from the fires that are raging at this point in time. And if you have any in the Houston area, my Lord, flooding, 2020 just needs to go away. I have a sign holding up going, I'm waiting for the flying monkeys. And it's absolutely the truth. What else can go wrong this year? But you know, we will live through it. People always do. And the idea is putting one foot in front of the other until you fall over dead. And then it doesn't matter anymore, right? So you just keep putting one foot in front of the other. And it's really funny because every time I've been through multiple recessions and multiple things in my life that have thrown a monkey wrench in my plan, it usually comes out the other side is a very positive thing. You know, some good stuff always happens from it. And obviously, even though you moved from a company that was an excellent company, and I've been worked with that company for 30 years of my career, it still worked out to be a better move for you to take that leap of faith and go for it. So yeah, I love the advice that you gave about logically thinking through, you know, it's old adage, the positives and negative list, but going beyond that to the vision of where you see yourself in the future with that company, because if it's more of the same old, then maybe the effort of change is not, that's not the right change for you. You know, it's going to progress you and make you grow and be better. Then that's the job. That's the one, that's the place you need to go.
Yeah. We work in an industry. We're very fortunate. We work with a community of veterinarians and technicians and assistants and managers that are helpers by nature. Mm-hmm. And in these kind of trying times, one of the things I like to think about is, I have little ones, so we watch Mr. Rogers. And there's a video of him talking about the advice his mom gave him when he was little, which was that whenever you see tragedy, either on the news or you see some type of video event of something bad happening, always look for the people who are helping. Because in the people who are helping, that's how you know that there will be hope. And that always sticks with me when you see stuff like that, especially in our communities, because we have a veterinary technician, and when the wildfires hit, she volunteered to go work with the Oregon Veterinary Medical Association and the Portland Veterinary Medical Association to provide relief care for people who've been displaced by the fires outside of her normal job. And so we actually offered to pay her for that time. And we're providing materials to help her with that. So when we have people stand up and volunteer, I look at it as our job as leaders within the industry to help support them. I'm not gonna force people to do things they don't wanna do.
Right.
But if somebody wants to raise their hand and they wanna help, I'm gonna do everything I can to help them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Craig. This has been great to talk to you again. And if you ever need training in Alaska, that's the one state that I haven't made. I've been to almost every other state in the union, Alaska and Montana. So I'm willing to go and do some training there if you need.
I'll keep that in mind. Yeah. Good to know.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us again. And today, again, our visitor is Craig Conklin. teaching us another lesson in resilience, some great leadership and management training here, and I hope you continue to enjoy and join us on The Bend.